It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. I'm very excited about my next guest, Riley Gale. He's the front man for a fantastic band called Power Trip. Insanely Hello. Talented. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing great. I was just going to continue blowing smoke up your ass. I was going to say you're probably my top three metal bands. You've had two amazing records out so far. Manifest Decimation and Nightmare Logic, which I played nonstop. I think it was throughout all of 2018. I think that's when it came out. You guys are from Dallas. You guys from Dallas. You've been around for maybe 12 years, and you're kind of working on a new album, but it's been a little difficult, I imagine, right?
Yep. It's kind of like, what's the point right now? You know?
Yeah.
We can't really do anything with it, so what's the point?
Is your experience during this shutdown weird? Like, I feel weird things. Like, I get up really early.
It's
Does that happen to you?
I sleep like I have been getting up particularly early. I kind of seem to have this double sleep pattern where I basically sleep twice a day, and it's for a couple hours each time. And so it'll be like, I might sleep from like 2 till 9 p.m. and then fall back to sleep again until 6. And then, I don't know. I have no sleep schedule whatsoever. The only thing is touring kind of prepares your body for that. So I think I've been handling it. I think we've all been handling it a little better than other people because we're sort of used to this kind of situation of having nothing to do and sitting around and not really needing to be on a super specific schedule of any kind. But but this is the longest we've ever gone, I think, without touring and without ever playing a show, period.
Yeah.
So, it's starting to wear on me and I think everyone else in it's grinded us down. The first couple months were a breeze. We were like, oh, this is easy. This is just like being home. And then we started seeing all our tours getting canceled. And then, it was just like, oh no. Just a wave of dread washing over us as our income for the rest of the year evaporated with every new case. So
is this this might be a really stupid question, but I asked a buddy of mine who managed bands, that shouldn't, and this is like shouldn't big artists who can sustain like years and could even retire if they wanted right now, shouldn't they be helping out the younger up and coming bands who can't weather this kind of thing financially? Are they doing it? And I'm not knowing about it. Like if bands like U2 and the Rolling Stones or whomever who are outrageously wealthy can somehow, I don't know, help out the bands that are like you're on a razor thin margin, and you lose these shows, you're screwed. But
no,
I don't know if that's.
I think that's a great question, a great point that no one has really brought up or is talking about. You know, a lot of musicians are focused on sending their money more towards a lot of the other movements going on right now. But
you're
even before all the protesting and things, you didn't really see too many artists, certainly no artist in heavy metal kind of step up and say, look, I have this insurmountable wealth, you know, who needs help? It's been kind of interesting to see that sort of lack of community there, and it's definitely frustrating. There was a program there's a program called Music Cares, which like helped set up bands and stuff to get taken care of for insurance and stuff. They're year round, but they try to do a COVID relief program where, you know, anyone could sign up. And as long as you prove that, you know, you had a show canceled or something like that, you could qualify for a stimulus. And and they ran out of funding in like 2 weeks. And so, wow. And it was only like $1,000 per art, you know, individual
yeah.
artist, which is nothing. So, and they haven't been able to get extra funding since. So, yeah, it kind of pisses me off, and you're dead on to notice that. But no one, and I understand it's their money to do what they want with, but no, you've never really seen, you know, I don't want to name any names because I don't
yeah.
know as far as people, you know, they could be
right.
great people and be planning something, but no, I haven't really seen anybody step up and offer to help out bands and say, you know, like, I'll cover your guarantees for, you know, the last month that you didn't mm-hmm. make or anything like that.
Yeah. Or even help set up virtual concerts because that costs money. And it's like, if you wanted, you know, if you wanted to see your band play, you know, remotely, they could help, they could at least help sponsor some kind of like show or event like that for bands that are struggling through this. That would be something,
yeah.
you know, yeah. you know, but
bands have just been doing it themselves, which is fine,
yeah.
you know, but
yeah.
right. There's not really, it's everyone is very much looking out for number one right now,
rather
than looking out for the community as a whole, which I think is going to have a devastating impact when it opens back up because, you know, I don't think we're going to jump right back into touring because you're mm-hmm. going to have all these bands trying to hit the road.
Yeah.
Good chance that, you know, shows will be more expensive mm-hmm. Because venues will be trying to make up for lost income. Bands will probably have to take lower guarantees. T-shirt prices may have to go up $5.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of music fans don't know this, but venues will take merch cuts. So
right.
even though you sold out their venue and, you know, got them, you know, nearly 100K at the bar for the night or whatever, they still want to come around and take 10 to as much as 20% of your merch sales on top of it, which is...
That's amazing. And you don't even make that. I mean, people think you make a lot of money off merch. You actually don't. It's a lot of work.
Well, it is, you know? It is where we make the most. It is.
Oh, okay.
We're basically traveling T-shirt salesmen, and the set and the set is the pitch, and that's me trying.
Wow.
To well, it's just it has the highest margins, you know.
Yeah.
And people just don't buy music the way that they used to anymore.
True.
But even then, now pressing records has gotten more expensive because vinyl is very popular again, which is
yep.
cool. But
yeah.
Yeah, it may, you know, it used to be a lot cheaper to press a record and now you're looking at waiting time. So yeah, shirts and merch are a huge deal. And so mm-hmm. if you're a bit, you know, if I went out and we're taking a couple $1,000 less off our guarantee and we're making less, even though we're charging more for shirts, we're making less because venues are taking cuts. It feels mm-hmm. like we grinded for these last 4 years only to have someone hit the reset button. You'll love this story just because, you know, my dad, but, you know, remember the days of regular Nintendo where you didn't have a save spot. So, you know, you kind of just had to, like, leave your TV on overnight and hope everything was okay.
Exactly.
And you sign back on. So my dad spent months trying to beat the first Zelda game, and he finally grinded his way all the way to the boss, and he was ready. He was gonna wake up in the morning, and he was gonna like beat the game. He was so, you know, he knew exactly what he was gonna do. He had it all planned out. And then I got up early at some point, and I decided I wanted to play something else, and I turned off his saved game, and he actually gave up. He never went back to it because it was. It was such a devastating blow to have put that much hard work into it and then have it just erased by
that's a great story. I love your dad too.
Yeah, yeah. You could imagine how upset he must have been. Which
speaking of your dad.
You know
speaking of your dad,
Yes.
I met you and your dad together. Do you remember that? It was like in
of course. Well,
how did we meet? We met on Twitter, right?
So this is what happened. I got wind that Fox News was using a Power Trip song. And, initial reaction was, well, that's not exactly the first choice of news companies that would have playing our songs. But then when I found out that it was you, I realized that I was like, oh, I've seen this guy. He's had Damien from up, you know, Damien's been on and Buzzo. And like, I was like, this guy's cool. He gets it. There must be something there. And so that's why I reached out to you, and you were like, gracious enough to reply, and you know that kind of happened since then. So once I sort of figured out, I was like, oh, this dude has good taste in music, and you know I don't disagree with everything that he says either, you know. So it ended up being fine, but that was. Yeah, that was how
we had a good time. We had a good drunken conversation when we first talked on the phone.
It was like 2 hours, like, too. Yes, 2.5 hours or something. Just drunkenly talking about whatever. Music, yes. Going to see shows at CBGB's.
Yeah.
That, you know, which I never got to do, obviously, but you said you
So I went to – I met you and your dad at – I can't remember it was a bar, and we – and it was before I had to do a book signing, and I got mildly drunk, and we had a great time because you came with me, you and your dad came with me, and we hung out in a bookstore with my fan base, which was quite amusing.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was so interesting. I have a picture of a kid in a full suit and a fedora, and he can't be older than like 10 years old. Do you remember that guy? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Kid? Really, really. I have actually. Dressed, redheaded kid, really sweet kid.
I think he wanted to be on TV. I think I remember him pitching himself.
Right.
Yeah. So
fun fact that I took you to North Park Mall, which is where you know all the celebrities go to shop and stuff. And there's a bar in there. What is it? Seasons, or it's like Seasons 52 or something. But it's basically an airport bar, right?
Right. Well, yeah.
It's a chain. But recently, I guess about a year ago, I met King Diamond because he lives out in North Texas. Lives up here, and I said, where exactly do you live? And he said, oh, I live in this town called Frisco. And I won't try and do a bad British accent right now, but said, you know, I was like, oh, what do you like to do? Is there anywhere you like to go hang out, drink or whatever? And he said, I like to go to this bar, Seasons. And I was like, really? So imagine, I mean, you know, not that he'd ever, imagine rolling into a bar like that, a Seasons kind of airport lounge style bar, and seeing King Diamond in his full get up. You know, drinking a highball or something all by himself on like a Tuesday night, you know, that gave me a really good mental image. But, you know, I was like, I might have to start lurking around that Seasons just to see if you're around and say hello. But I thought that I got a kick out of that of all the places he likes to go, it was kind of like a corporate, like a businessman bar where guys hang out. But like you said, between meetings and book signings and shit like that.
Yeah, so, that's what it is. It has no actual weird, unique character, which gives it its character, you know?
Right.
It's
nondescript bar ever.
Yes, yeah. It would be amazing if it wasn't a chain. It just looked like it should be a chain.
Yes.
That would be a really interesting style.
Yeah. You know? Frisco's nicest dive bar. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
I know that we talked a lot about drugs, and I was going to talk to you.
Sorry.
Talk about a left turn note, because I started thinking about it. I was like, I wanted to talk to you about what happened to a quote friend of mine. I'm not going to say who it is because as a birthday gift, my friend was given a fairly large sum of mushrooms, psilocybin, and went up to the woods, and everybody was so careful. They thought they were careful. Worst experience of her life. But it's weird. It's that thing where it's the worst experience, but she would not give it up for anything. Like, it's something that she's glad that she did, but she has now, then this happened like 3 or 4 months ago, and she has kind of not been the same person, in the sense that, like, something opened up, and like, it's almost like she sees what's behind the curtain, or it was a horrible experience. Number one, it was a horrible experience. She thought that the woods were after her, the furniture was after her, people were, but then she thought that nothing was real. And that was her epiphany. And I know you're kind of like an expert in the field of psilocybin and its uses and its effects. What is your analysis?
I'm nowhere near an expert. Especially there's guys who are chemists who could tell you everything about this, but essentially, your brain functions on this chemical and this chemical balance. And when you introduce this foreign substance into it, it can obviously alter the way that you feel and perceive things. I like to say that even when people, I like to say everyone's first trip is going to be overwhelming, because what's going to happen is you're going to be able to see, in a sense, how the universe works. You might have a really, really like basic scientific epiphany. Like, you're like, wow, water gets cold and turns to ice. And then when it gets really hot, it evaporates. But you sort of get to see the function. It's almost like you're watching chemistry happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that really makes sense, but
that makes total sense.
So you're being affected and you're watching it as you're happening, but what it's affecting is your consciousness. So things can get really confusing and overwhelming, because my favorite thing to do if someone's going to trip for a first time is I tell them to write themselves a note and to keep it on them at all times. And it's a note from sober Greg. So and it says, hey, look, you're on drugs. It might not feel like it's ever going to end, but I promise it will. The world's a good place. It's beautiful. No one is going to hurt you. You're not in any danger, and just reassuring things, and then just sign it sober Greg. And I've had people tell me it saved their trip, because it almost feels like a totem. They wouldn't even read it. Just knowing that they had it on there.
Right.
On their person would bring them a big sense of relief. And, it's never a good idea for your first trip to trip alone or with people who have never tripped before. I think you should always have one person, and they should probably stay sober unless they're really experienced, but you should have one person as sort of a guide, or someone who just sort of sets the tone. You say, I'm too hot. Have someone help them out. Let me get you a fan, or do you need something to drink, or, you don't like this song. What do you want to listen to? Things so people can just sort of relax and enjoy. The biggest mistake in it, which sounds like the mistake that your friend made, is that they overthought it. It's kind of like, the feeling of getting on a roller coaster, and once you're locked in and it leaves, there's no going back. It's kind of like that. You just have to sit back and enjoy the ride. And sometimes it's going to be scary. Sometimes it might be funny. Like a roller coaster mixed with like a haunted house. And it could be the most traumatic thing for you, or it could be a riot. You're just crying, laughing all the time. If I do psychedelics, I tend to seek out the most visual things. I try not to get overly contemplative, which mushrooms do. I think LSD, good LSD is much more visual and much easier to sort of control. Now, you don't want to take too much. If you take too much, you can really, yourself up. Not permanently, but you can can do some damage, and especially if you're someone who's faced deep trauma in their life, some of that stuff does come to the forefront. But you know, the first time I ever went to Vegas, I took a bunch of acid, and I was, you know, sort of like, I have no idea if this is a good idea or a bad idea, because you have this, you know, Vegas is like a theme park for adults where you're sort of trapped into this one street, and it's everything sort of cartoonish, and it's hyper capitalist and stuff. And I thought I was going to overthink it and freak out. And I ended up having the best time, the best trip I've ever had, because I was just laughing at everything. Everything became just visual candy land that I was just, you know, frolicking through for 6 hours or something like that, you know, and it can be a lot of fun, and it can also be incredibly helpful, you know. I don't consider it a recreational drug. I take it very seriously.
People
who do it recreationally, I think, you know, have a lot of experience, or they're very, very comfortable with themselves. Or maybe they're just stupid. So, you know, sometimes stupid people can just trip and never have to worry, because they don't ever think about anything real or deep.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, you know, it can be great. There's tons of proof of different substances, not just LSD and psilocybin, but things like DMT and ketamine, helping with PTSD and depression. And they give it to terminally ill patients to help them get the concept of death, and it has had outrageously positive results. I'm gonna mess this up really bad, but I know I read this study a few years ago. I'm not gonna get the details exactly right, but I want to say about 20 scientists in Sweden, every day for 20 years, a group of like 16 of them or something, maybe it was 20, would microdose LSD in coffee. And, you know, a microdose is something where, for listeners, I'm sure you know, but listeners who know, microdose is such a small amount that you don't really, you're not supposed to feel it at all. And you sort of, and you can kind of build it up over time. It's not that you build it up and start developing hallucinations or anything, but it becomes a part of your system and sort of your mental, your brain makeup. And they did this for like, I want to say 15 years, and they studied, and they produced basically like a journalistic kind of explanation of their lives, and all these people were happy and healthy. A lot of them had ended up a lot of the scientists within the group had ended up you know, getting together and getting married. You know, like the their quality of life seemed to be significantly high. It was significantly higher than people in Sweden, which is, you know, considered one of the happiest places in the world as far as, you know, living and things like that. So yeah, it's really fascinating, and it's frustrating that these drugs are illegal because, you know, scientists aren't really able to do the research on them that they could. We could have if we hadn't spent the last 30 years having a war on drugs, we might have developed you know, you could go to Walgreens and get an over-the-counter medicine that instantly cures your depression or something like that.
It drives me crazy when I think about that, when I think about the amount of time and money spent on that. And now they're finally going back and they're looking like at MDMA, and they're looking at all of these medical purposes for these drugs, which they could have done in the 1950s, or they were actually doing in the 50s and the 60s. And then they just completely stopped it. Even stuff like methamphetamine and cocaine. I want to get back to something that you said though. aside from just the medical purposes, all of this stuff should be legal. I think everything should be legal. But you mentioned the word control. The greatest thing about legalizing drugs is that you're able to modulate the portion size of a product and make sure that it's commercially safe. So that, like, if you don't smoke one giant cigarette, you buy a pack of 20. And that's right. The way you would modulate cocaine or any kind of drug, Oxy. I mean, the people that are dying from Oxy aren't dying from the prescriptions. The overwhelming majority is street purchased opiates, which are basically laced with fentanyl, which is fentanyl. Basically.
But other things. They found all sorts of crazy other things, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the scariest thing is, someone market it, you think you're going to buy cocaine and you end up buying fentanyl, which is the exact, you know, opposite. One goes up, one goes down, and that's how people end up dead. And it ends up with this stigma and like you said, if we were able to have doctors who could sit down and prescribe you the right amount and like I said, a micro dose or whatever, there's so much that could have been fixed. That, you know, a lot of these have shown to there's been some families of psychoactive drugs that have shown to battle cancer. Do you know who Alexander Shulgin is?
I know the name.
Yeah,
I know the last name.
He's an American chemist who's basically come up with, he synthesized an entire family of drugs called the 2Cs, the 2C family. Mm-hmm. He had a big part in, I think he discovered MDMA, or maybe someone else did and they lost the formula, but he basically was able, he was big with the MDMA and,
mm-hmm.
Like I'm saying, you know, like these guys, they spent all this time trying to prove to people that these things, that these chemicals, these substances could be helpful. And the trick that they learned to get around the government trying to make all these drugs illegal is that, you know, all you have to do to change a substance into something else is, you know, change like a hydrogen molecule or something like that. So, and it's a waste of the government's time and money because they're constantly trying to chase down these quote unquote new drugs that are hitting the street or whatever, and making them illegal. So, you know, like I said, Shulgin's known for discovering the 2C family, which is a psychedelic. I'm no chemist, but basically there's 2CE, and then they would outlaw that, and then so he came up with 2CI, and they would outlaw that, and then he would come up with 2CB, and they would outlaw that. there's this constant like chase that's coming around, and they never get
that's
to
great.
Stop. But the worst part is they never get to stop and examine these chemicals and see what they could really be used for and
how
they can help people.
Here's another, but you know what? Here's another
different.
Thing.
You know, yeah. I don't really see much of a medical use for something like cocaine. Certainly not heroin, and certainly not like it's really funny to me Adderall is one like hydrogen molecule away from being methamphetamine, like crystal meth.
Right.
I mean, when you
but you know what?
The bottle, it says amphetamine. What you're taking is methamphetamine. So you've got half the country walking around basically addicted to meth because that's the kind of work we need in the world. We need people who can work 16-hour days and be hooked on Adderall and doctors to push it and make money off of it, you know?
Yeah, so, it's incredible. Yeah. Everywhere, when I was working in media, almost every venue that I worked at, there was 20 to 30% of the workers were on Adderall, and you could tell by their they had tremendous focus, no creativity. It was very interesting. But I want to bring up another thing that kind of, you know what, it's just the robot. The thing that I find interesting is that even if something doesn't have a medical purpose, it should still be legal, because who gives it, like a martini is legal. There's no medicinal purpose unless it's unless you want to talk about reducing anxiety. Like if somebody says to me, I don't think you should be able to buy opiates over the counter because, you know, it's addictive. And I go, well, everything good is addictive, but it's like, who the hell are you to tell me what I can do to my body? If I want to seek oblivion in any way, shape or form, yeah. Why is that a moral decision? That's not a moral decision for you to make. It's for me to make, unless I'm hurting somebody else. And I'm not. I'm not even hurting myself. You know, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead and finish your thought. Cause I agree. I essentially agree. I was just going to add to it.
Yeah. It's weird because like, if you allow the human being to control these products, they can control the consequences as well. But if you take the control out of it, then they can't control the end result, because then they get the bad drug, or they take too much, or they eat a pot brownie and they didn't realize how much pot was in the brownie, and now they're at the ER. But all of these things can be controlled when you give it to the individual. And sure, there's going to be people who are going to be addicted, people who are going to overdose and die. But we're already having that now with them being illegal. My guess is it goes down like it did. I think is it Peru? I can never. Portugal. Yeah.
And I think there is a South American country, maybe Uruguay, Paraguay.
Yeah.
But Portugal.
I think so.
Sure. And you're seeing it. Yeah. All the countries that take it less seriously. I mean, you've been to Australia, right?
Yeah. Long time ago.
Everything there is incredibly illegal. You look at Southeast Asia where everything is incredibly illegal, right? Everyone is a drunk. Yeah. Like, you know, I've never seen, you know, in Australia, the level of like daily drunkenness and just the amount that people would drink, and the you know, bars staying open until 4 or 5 a.m. everywhere, you know, it just goes to show that like, it's not about people's health. It's not about, you know, the morality of any of it. It's all about the money, you know?
Alcohol exactly.
Was able to take over and just look at how we used to give, you know, opium to babies for toothaches and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that if I had cancer and I was in some kind of severe pain, that I would want, you know, like clean opium from a flower, right, than, yeah, like you said, some Percocet that was brewed in a lab and pressed and shipped to me, you know? And I think that does have side effects. I tend to stray towards drugs that kind of occur within nature, you know?
Yeah.
Weed, obviously, you know, DMT is something that I'm a huge proponent of, that is in almost everything, almost every plant. It's in our brains. It's we have a huge amount of it in our brains when we're born, and supposedly our brains are flooded with it before we die. That's supposed to, some drug philosophers think that's the experience of, you know, watching your life flash before your eyes and things like that. I forgot where we were going with that specific question. But
it's okay, because you know why? We're running out of time anyway. I gotta put on my hair and makeup because I gotta look cute. And you have to go pick up somebody at the airport.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not in a rush. I wanna stay on forever. I'm gonna leave this is my advice, since this is what we mostly talked about. If someone ever wants to try a psychedelic, they should pursue finding DMT.
Yes, it's a short high, right? Isn't it? It's like a. It's in the high, like 50,
It's very high, or it's very short. It's very short. It's the most intense. Now, the way that you can take it, it has many names, ayahuasca, that it's also the active ingredient in the toad venom that you may have heard about and things like that. But DMT essentially is all over the place. But when you smoke pure DMT, it's like you said, the veil is lifted back. Or do you remember the movie Videodrome with James Woods?
Yes, of course.
Okay,
that was great.
Yeah,
David Cronenberg.
So you know, in the scene where he's looking at the TV and it pans out, and it's him watching. He's watching himself watch the TV. That's sort of what happens with DMT at first. Is that you're sort of pulled back to see this shape of reality, and you're pulled back to sort of see the shape of your reality, and then you kind of see the shape of the universe as a whole. Some people go places. They've talked about meeting different types of creatures. And what's interesting is that when people share stories, a lot of them, when they describe what they can describe, it's all very similar. So it's something that if I could make everyone in the world have to try a drug one time, I would make everyone smoke DMT once, all at once. And I think everyone would instantly drop all the bullshit that they've got going on in the world. And you feel connected. You feel that higher power. And when you feel this higher power, it's something that you kind of, like you said, your friend cannot stop thinking about it. They had sort of a taste of that higher level of consciousness. And even though it sort of scared them at first, you know, I bet that they want to try it again sometime. I bet they've mentioned wanting to try it again, huh? Said never, ever again?
I think she's right in the middle of that, where it's like, well, she's terrified, but she's curious. And so she's reading about it. She's listening to people. I think what it did was it permanently changed the way she looked at reality. And I've heard this from other people that they suddenly realize how subjective reality is.
Yes.
And that we all operate with these frameworks that are kind of put on us. And that took that framework away. The thing about DMT. Is a common initial side effect vomiting? Is that, or am I confusing it with a different?
No. A lot of people vomit. It gives you a very intense body high, and I don't really know the science behind it. So some people pass out for 10 to 15 minutes, and I've seen people pass out and vomit and stuff like that. That's why you always want someone around. And when you do ayahuasca, which is DMT in a tea form, that's a much longer trip. That can last, 8 to 12 hours. But if you just smoke DMT, they call it the businessman's trip, because in like 45 minutes, you're essentially back to normal. But you're right. I think you put it on perfectly, is that you're able to sort of, what did Huxley say? You're the windows of perception are wiped clean. You've got all this junk and these things that you've learned and established and that have sort of developed over your vision, that sort of clouds things or defines things, and so it allows you to look at things differently. That's why so many musicians and artists were so into it, because it's like, for example, it's like, well, I'm looking at this chair, and I know what a chair is. I know a chair has agency in the sense that I should sit in it. But what if I did this? And then somebody, turns it upside down, and then it's suddenly a piece of art, because they've made some kind of commentary on a perfect example is, I think Foucault wrote it, but it's a short book called This Is Not a Pipe. And what it is painting of a pipe. And it talks about, like you said, the subjectiveness of it. You walk up to somebody and say, well, what is this? They would say, a painting. Or somebody might say, a pipe. Or somebody might say, a painting of a pipe. So, right. Yeah, I think the best part about it and what it's really done is allowed me to connect with guys like you much easier, where we if 10 years ago I didn't have as much experience with psychedelics, I probably wouldn't have been able to embrace or sort of put myself in your shoes and see your perspective, which
right.
That's what I wish all the cops in the world could do right now, is just smoke DMT once, and then you'll suddenly understand, you know, that the sort of, not the fear that people live in from cops necessarily, but that they'll understand that the rest of the world is one big community, and to have sides and ideologies. I think ideology
is the worst.
Is the worst. It's dangerous.
It's the worst.
There's never a perfect system.
No, there isn't.
Psychedelics are great because they obliterate that. They allow you to understand. They help you think in more abstract ways. That things have perspective and that things change, and that, you know, exactly what you're saying earlier. It all goes back to how people refuse to step outside of their own perspective. And psychedelics help that a lot.
Yeah. Well, Riley, this has been great. If any of the listeners want to pick up an album, the latest one is Nightmare Logic, which is fantastic. And then you'll want to go back and get Manifest Decimation. And I'm looking forward to the third one. I know it's going to take some time, but the band will get back on its feet, I'm sure, and it's going to be great. If it's not soon, it's going to be sooner, I hope.
We're not too worried about it, and
yeah,
I'm excited to get back out into it. And if not, I'll figure out a way. I want to thank you, before you let me go, I want to thank you, listeners, for letting us babble about something that I'm sure they're not that into, and probably just sounds like a bunch of bullshit, but
you'd be surprised. There's a small portion of Fox people who are. Remember, if you being a teenager in the '60s puts you in your '60s now.
That's true.
You know.
So I mean,
all right, buddy.
All right, Greg. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.